Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. And once again, our focus is going to be on the three cases that we've been following: Hayley Cummings, Kaylee Anthony, and our latest acquisition, shall we say, Zachary Pittman. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Jan.
From upstate New York, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. How's Denny doing today?
I'm doing just excellent, Simon. Thank you very much. And hello, everybody. Hello, Jan. And glad to be with you.
Are you melting in New York?
Today was a nice day, but boy, last week it was bad. It was they always joke about the dry heat in Las Vegas, but I'll tell you, the humidity does make a difference.
Oh, it does. It's been in the 90s down here, and so humid, just unbelievable. From the state of Maine, we have investigator Peter Hyatt. Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. Hello, everyone.
Are you also suffering from the heat wave?
Yes, we are. It was up to 90 degrees this week. It was brutal, especially that we're not used to that sort of weather. But worse is at night when we're expecting temperatures in the 50s and a nice blanket on you, but it's been hot and uncomfortable and sticky and humid.
Huh. How do the lobsters like it?
I don't think they like it much at all.
Yeah, well, they're going to like it better than down here in the Gulf.
Right. From Orlando, Florida, we have Dave Nackle, otherwise known as Marinade Dave. Dave, good to talk to you again.
Hello. Yes, my pleasure. Always a pleasure. Hello, everyone.
I am expecting T.J. Hart to turn up at some point. He seems to have more bad luck with cell phones than anyone I've ever met. Although I did know a guy in San Diego. We worked on a project, and his speciality was dropping pagers into the toilet. He apparently just didn't seem to be able to go to the toilet without submerging his pager. And I think he went through, like, three of them in 2 months. But, okay, that's for another time. As always, our phone lines are open. Our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. Or you're more than welcome to ask your questions in the chat room. I must apologize for my voice and the fact that you're likely to hear me hacking and coughing. I have one of those dreaded summer colds. Now, you can get a cold when it's, 90 too many degrees outside is beyond me. I can only assume it's the air conditioning. Okay, let's start off with a quick Zachary Pittman update. This case we've been following for, what, 2-3 weeks, Jen?
Yeah, about that. Well, since just before the 24th of last month. So.
There wasn't any real hard news this week, but there was something that happened that absolutely blew my mind, and I do want to get the panel's opinion on it. Last Monday, I had a conversation with the police chief of Pearl River, Louisiana. The town has a total of about 2,000 residents. He was incredibly pleasant. Now, that could be something to do with the fact that he's up for re-election. However, seeing as he's won election 28 times in a row, Seems somewhat unlikely that that would be the cause. He told me that his department are happy to assist in any way they can in the search for Zachary Pittman. In fact, that there was a search about 3 weeks ago, and he sent one of his patrol cars and a reserve officer to help coordinate and act as the command post. I was incredibly impressed. He doesn't have to do that. You know, the actual area where Zachary disappeared from is some 7 miles away from Pearl River, so it's under the control of the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office. Very impressed. And then the bombshell arrived. I am doing my very best Nancy impression. Bombshell! All right, he volunteered this information. I didn't even ask. It came out of nowhere. And, you know, rule number one, never say anything. You know, never volunteer information. Anyway, he volunteered the statement that his department were not made aware of the case for at least a month after Zach had disappeared. Now, you know, we've covered the Kaylee story, the Haley story, and some other stories, and we all know the standard operating procedure that the cops use. Yeah, sure, it varies a little bit from area to area, but inevitably, you start at ground zero, and when you don't get any luck there, you start to move outward. Pearl River is 7 miles away, and it's also the closest town of any size. I mean, I was shocked. Denny, what do you make of that? I mean, would two police departments deliberately not talk to each other?
That has happened. I know it sounds odd, but I've run into similar cases where they claim the neighboring jurisdictions aren't aware of what the other one's doing or what's going on. So it sounds a little odd, but I wouldn't say it's totally impossible to happen.
I'm just shocked. I mean, 7 miles.
Let me say something to you, Simon, because you've hit something very close to home to what I'm working on. We have a situation I'm looking into that has a city police department, and then, of course, there's a county sheriff's department. And both agencies at one time or another were involved with the same case. It started out in the city, then moved out into the county. And there's information that's available that one gets and doesn't tell the other one. I mean, both agencies have a legitimate investigative interest in this case. Now, whether it's personality conflict between maybe the detectives or what, I can't explain it. But information is not flowing smoothly between two agencies that are investigating different aspects of the same case. So it's bizarre, and it certainly works in the best interest of the criminal. But that is actually going on.
Peter, what are your thoughts? I mean, are you as shocked as I am, or was?
No, I think that having moved from New York to Maine, I've seen what it's like in the small town squabbles that take place. We could have two personalities clashing even within the same department and not share information. So I think Denny's correct. It's not even unusual, sadly, to say that they don't share information. The competitiveness can go down to literally two people, and lost in the middle of it is a heartbroken family. Very sad.
I mean, the whole thing just horrified me. As soon as Penny Rayner said that, I went, whoa! You know, what's wrong with this picture? I mean,
probably it's worse that.
Carry
I'm sorry.
Peter.
Probably it's worse that I'm not surprised. In fact, when I listen to you speak, I wish I was surprised by it, but I'm not, and that speaks volumes itself.
Dave, you work or you live in the Orlando area, which is obviously a much larger population than we're talking about in this case. I mean, are you shocked about this story?
Well, you mean about the police not communicating with each other? Not really, because I think, you know, where you have agencies, law enforcement agencies, overlap each other, they still might have different responsibilities. Like, for example, in Orlando, an Orlando police officer might be the first one at the scene of a vehicle accident, you know. But then it's the state trooper's job to basically investigate the accident. So you might have different responsibilities for each department. And like here, you've got the Orange County Sheriff's Office, you've got Orlando Police, you've got the MBI, which is the Metropolitan Bureau of Investigation. So, you know, I think they all basically work hand in hand, but there are some areas where they're not, I think, allowed to really work on certain things. That could create issues. Now, in Casey's case, I think it's pretty much, Orange County Sheriff's Office. In conjunction with other agencies, but I think, you know, depending on who's in charge of the investigation, which agency, I think that makes all the difference in the world, too. So, that's my opinion on it.
Well, what's bothering me about this, and it's not just this case. I mean, I'm hearing stories from other parts of the country that, you know, the same thing goes on. This needs to change. This cannot possibly be the best way to run investigations. Denny?
It's not always policy. You know, Simon, it's not always policy. Sometimes the policy that is written and the practice that is the norm has for a great flow of communication. It sometimes can come down to simply two personalities or even one personality that just sits on things longer than the other one does or petty jealousies or all sorts of things that can go on in those areas. And as frustrating it is, it's as common as any two people bickering anywhere. Take a look this week at the Kyron Horman case where we learned that the local police department sent out on a sting operation the alleged landscaper who 7 months previously allegedly was offered money to kill the dad. Now, I don't know how you all feel about that, but from my perspective, I have to think that the federal agents that were there were begging the local law enforcement, don't do this. This is goofy. She's on high alert. She knows she's being investigated. And when you come up there and say, with a stranger and the landscaper and demand $10,000, otherwise we're going to tell the police about you offering money previously, that just shut that stepmother down completely. I mean, that looked like the Keystone Cops.
I do want to get to the Kyron case, so let's just hold that in abeyance just for a few minutes. Jen, you and I both spoke to Christy a couple of times this week.
Yeah.
How would you view her demeanor? She seems to be happier. You know, at least someone's stirring the.
Right. Well, what you're saying, I see what you're saying. But yes, she does. Right now, she doesn't feel she's alone in this. Before, she couldn't get nobody to talk to her, nobody to do anything whatsoever. Like with the sheriff, what Benny Rand told you, everybody she talked to would tell her they'd never heard about this. And it was really getting to the best of her. And now she feels like she has more hope at least getting his name out to see if people can, you know, they can figure out somebody that has some type of clue to this and to what happened to Zachary.
And actually, I've also been trying to get hold of the mayor of Pearl River, a gentleman by the name of James Levine, and he seems to be keeping a very, very low profile. In fact, I found great humor in this. I'm of the opinion that it's a good idea to act the way that Putnam County does in releasing information on the Haley case. You do it late Thursday or on Friday. That way, people have the whole weekend to contemplate life. I decided that I'd give James Levine a call on Friday afternoon. It was approximately 3 o'clock. Not only did I not get hold of him, I didn't get hold of anyone at City Hall, and it completely blew my mind that they don't even have an answering machine. I mean, it just rang and rang and rang. In fact, I tried it twice, you know, just to make sure I hadn't misdialed. You know, how can you be the mayor and not even at least have an answering machine? You know, is this what small towns are all about these days? Okay, enough of beating up on Levine. I also heard from some anonymous sources this week, residents in the area. They do not, under any circumstance, want their names mentioned. But what they have done is give me a great deal of background information. And what I'm seeing is just not a pretty picture. Jan, what did you make of that story that I published, the two off-duty cops that beat the tar out of a guy in the bar?
You caught me off guard, Simon. I read it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, well,
I'm not much of help right now.
It kind of puts it into a perspective, you know.
The guy was sure beat up.
Oh yeah, yeah. We have the picture, and that is not grease paint. That is not Hollywood.
Okay, well, I can tell you this much though. Whenever I was young, before I had my kids before I got married, I used to go a lot to Pearl River in the bars down there because it was just easier to get in and out. They weren't as crowded. But the people, it was a little scary because, you know, if you crossed, if there was a fight or someone, you could tell that something was going to happen, that these people weren't going to either get away with this or whatever. They took care of them. The cops would drag them outside, and that, you know, we didn't see them no more after that. But it wouldn't surprise me at all from what I, you know, from way back 35 years ago, whatever it was, 34. No, I don't want to say how old because I'd make me say how old I am.
Jen, we all know you're 35.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all at how they are.
Okay, I do want to put out a general appeal, and I base this on the people that want to remain anonymous. It's an appeal for information. I know that some Pearl River area residents are listening today. If you have information about the Zach Pittman case and you're not comfortable talking to the local people, you can email either myself or Jan. My email is zzsimonb@gmail.com. And Jan is...
jnny@gmail.com.
Actually, I think you missed an O.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
I said, all right, jnny@gmail.com. Genio.
Okay, look, let's take a quick caller. Assuming my switchboard will allow me. Which doesn't seem to want to play ball. So, come on. Okay, caller coming in from the 714 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us? Hello, 714. Okay. Well, let's
Simon.
Move on.
Simon?
Yes.
Before you move on, I've been thinking a little bit about some of the conversations so far, and I'd like to throw something out and get everyone's opinion on it. First, let me preface this by saying I am former law enforcement, I'm pro-law enforcement, and I think the vast majority of agencies and individuals do great work, dedicated and professional. However, I will admit, and I found out even more recently, that like any business or any company that employs human beings, you're not going to have everyone 100% with the program. And I'm working now with two or three different families about some unsolved deaths. And when we talked earlier about different agencies not communicating, neighboring agencies not communicating, and as Peter said, you can find the same thing right within a department. It doesn't have to be two different departments. You can have, for whatever reason, detectives not talking to each other or sharing information. And what I have done now, because I run into some of these same things that you have about an agency saying, well, we didn't know anything about that until a month later. I'm suggesting to the people, and it's not a criticism of the cops, I think it's just prudent to do it this way, is if you're going to communicate with anybody, a governmental agency, police agency, whoever, if you have email and can communicate by email, do it and save your emails. Open yourself a file so you can go back and find out when you contacted them, what information you relayed to them, or what you asked them for. If you don't, if you can't do it by email, you have to send a letter, keep a copy of the letter, send it certified so you have some proof that they actually received your request or the information you submitted. And if you don't have email, if you don't have, if it's something that doesn't have to be sent by mail but can be done by phone, keep a log. Every time you make a phone call regarding this particular matter you're working on, make a note of the date, time, who you talked with, and a synopsis of the conversation. Because a lot of times you get involved in these he said, he said, or he said, she said situations where somebody says, well, geez, I wish you'd have let me know about that. That was important information you didn't tell me. That's why I didn't do anything with it. And yet maybe you did, in fact, pass that information on to someone, a lead or a tip or an investigative suggestion, and somebody fell asleep at the switch and never did anything with it. And then when the issue comes up again later, you can't prove you told them. So I don't know what everybody else thinks, and it's unfortunate, but I think it's prudent if you're the family and you're trying to get an investigation move forward or get some justice for a victim, that keeping track of who you're dealing with, what you tell them, and the time frame is important. So I just throw that out and see if anybody agrees with me or thinks I'm overdoing it.
Oh, no, I think that is a very valid point. It is important to, keep records of the when, the who, the why, and all the rest of it. I do believe that we have the late T.J. Hart joining us.
Yeah, always late. And thank you, Denny. I tell you what, that was pretty darn good. That was awful darn good.
Oh, my. Oh, thank you, TJ.
Not a problem.
Okay, let's move on to the Haley Cummings case. TJ, you always seem to crop up at just the right time. Do you have any updates?
Well, the only update is that Tommy Crosland's sentencing hearing got continued, and that was somewhat to be expected. When he made his first plea a few weeks ago, it was one of those things where they were going to do some other investigation. I don't have the exact terms in front of me, but pending a further investigation. And whatever that means is whatever it means, and they're not through with it yet. So obviously they have to wait a little bit longer before going to court and seeing if this negotiated plea is going to come to fruition. So it's one of those things where you have to hurry up and wait. And continuations are nothing new in trials. As you well know, if you've been following the Kaylee Anthony trial, there's all sorts of motions and continuations. And it's basically trying to buy some time before a decision has to be made to make sure that you've done the very best for your client as you can possibly do. In this case, it would be Don Werder. But Don is only the attorney for Tommy Crosland for the drug case, as he has stated. And he's not said anything else, and no charges have been filed since Tommy gave out some information about where the body of Haley Cummings might be found, which led, of course, to the search in the St. Johns River.
Do you think it's possible that conversations are still going on concerning this plea deal?
I'm thinking more investigation is going on right now, and I don't think that the prosecutor necessarily really wants to talk until the prosecutor is satisfied that they've done everything they could to make sure that this deal is a good one. I mean, let's face it, you don't want to have somebody, you know, talking smack and have nothing to do with the final outcome of perhaps another case, or this one for that matter. You want to make sure that person's telling the truth and you're not getting a get-out-of-jail-for-free card.
One of the
it looks bad, and I've got to tell you that when you're the district attorney, or state attorney, that's an elected position in most places. And you don't want to have something like that hanging over you, and neither does the public, for that matter.
Well, one of the things that I've been hearing is that Tommy isn't enjoying his stay at the vacation home in Putnam County.
No, and ironically, everyone had told him that perhaps maybe going into general population isn't exactly what you really want to do. You think you might want to be in general population, but you really don't want to be in general population. And it turns out that he's getting picked on pretty much every moment that someone can pick on him, it appears. And according to his attorney, that it's borderline harassment. And he'd like to see something done about that. But, you know, jail is what jail is. It's not where good people go. I'm not saying that what the other inmates are doing is right or I condone it. I'm just saying jail is what jail is.
Yeah. Peter, do you think it's wise for Tommy to be in general pop?
I certainly don't. I mean, no place you go, you're going to find anyone that likes or takes well to anyone involved with any type of child case in any length. I was wondering, perhaps TJ might be able to shed a little light on this, is some of the complications involved, could it be caused by Werder himself because he is not officially the attorney of record regarding Haley Cummings, which there are no charges filed? Would that cause a delay?
Well, it appears that he has kind of said a few things that maybe a more careful attorney might have refrained from saying, tipping the hand a little bit when he said that I am his attorney for the drug charges. I am not his attorney for any kind of manslaughter charges. Well, so far there haven't been any manslaughter charges presented, so, you know, technically he's telling the truth, but why would you even say such a thing? And that's probably what's I would could say is probably putting a little bit of a stick in the mechanism.
Dave, what's your
first of all? Oh, I don't know. I mean, first of all, I just wanted to say I think we're trying to spread a computer virus on. With that hacking back there. Yeah, that coughing. I can tell you're not feeling all that good. But anyway, I kind of like disagree with what everybody's saying. I don't know. It's like that, you know, hasn't really gone anywhere since that postponement. So I don't think there's really anything new to say about it. And I don't know what's going to happen. I think that everybody's right about the ongoing investigation.
My question for you was, is it a wise move putting Tommy in general population?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, why not? I mean, excuse me, at this point. At this point, what difference would it make? He's not accused of murder. He's nothing more than a common drug dealer. And I'm sure there are plenty of them in Putnam Mensing, Johns County jails. You know, so what makes him all that more important? Because he's been in the news? You know, didn't he make a comment that he's gained weight since he's been off drugs? And he's like beefing up. He's exercising. So I don't see any reason why you wouldn't put him in there. Just my opinion, of course.
TJ, do you think that he should be in general pop?
Considering his situation, and I know what Dave was trying to say, but each case is different, and I would almost default to saying for prisoner safety, it should be reconsidered, just for that matter. If you're Putnam County, the last thing you want on your hands is a guy who's going to the hospital or to the morgue after being in your jail.
Mm. Is it a tool? Simon, you think it's a tool at all that giving him a taste of general pop him to... I can't help but wonder
that. Or he might talk to someone?
Certainly.
He
might talk to someone?
Ron's in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I think it's a wonderful investigative tool. If Tommy has anything else to say, he's going to be spilling it pretty darn quick, because I'm mm-hmm. sure he's cellmates with someone called Bubba.
Oh.
What about, like, you take a look at Joran Vandersloot, or whatever his name is, and he's already made friends, and he killed, like, a very popular race car driver and politician's daughter, you know, and I guess some of the prisoners, they've got him sequestered, and they'll probably have to keep him that way, but he's already made friends, so obviously there are people there in that jail that aren't out to kill him. So I, you know, I feel the same way about the Boston. I mean, I think that it's right too that if his life is in jeopardy, move him back out, you know, of general population. But I think it's an excellent idea for a tool.
Mm. Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. TJ, do you know how long the continuance is for?
I'm looking that up right now. I just pulled into the radio station studios. I'll have that for you here in just a moment. Right off the top of my head, I don't have it. I believe it's sometime in August, but I'll have to check to make sure.
Hmm. The other thing that happened this week was both you and I got a number of very grumpy calls from William Cobra Storbs.
Oh, yeah.
What did you make of them?
Here's a man who's pretty much fighting for his professional life. He thought that in good faith, he made an agreement between his attorney, the state attorney, and the judge that all would be right as long as he would basically stay out of Putnam County and around and away from that judicial district for pretty much the rest of his life. He can go back to doing his PI and his bail bondsman job. And the thing is, yeah, he can be a PI. Yeah, he can be a bail bondsman. But one thing that they forgot to look at, in retrospect, I believe they should have, is that they had charged him with misdemeanor simple battery in his case with Donald Snodgrass. And with that simple battery, that means he cannot carry a firearm. Well, if you look at the history of some of the people, including a terrorist who was out to, you know, harm this nation, which was covered by ABC News TV and radio in 2020 and Brian Ross Investigatives, he runs with some pretty rough crowds. And you kind of need something like that for your own personal protection. There is a possibility he could lose his firearms license, and it all depends on the interpretation of a law with the Department of Licensing in the state of Florida through the Department of Agriculture, which says may lose your license, not shall. And they're looking for some kind of definitive and some clarity there. And I believe I have forwarded on to you and hopefully to a lot of people the names of some senators and some folks with the Department of Licensing if you'd like to petition or appeal on behalf of Mr. Stobbs, so that we can get this one gray area cleared up so the guy can go back to work, feed his family.
Actually, as I understand it, it's not just the firearms carry permit that's the issue. It's actually the PI license.
PI license. I'm sorry. What was the PI? I'm sorry. I got that mixed up there. But he needs to be fully equipped to do his job.
Actually, I haven't bothered to investigate yet, but the PI license is actually a curious one, and one that seems to have significantly changed in the last 5 or 10 years. The major issue is access to some databases that are not available to the general public. You know, if you are hunting someone down, it's awfully handy to have access to these databases.
Documents, yeah.
Yes. But I guess
otherwise you're just like us, you know, trying to Google track somebody, and it doesn't work too well.
I very much doubt that, you know, Cobra has a, you know, Google alert on whoever it is he's trying to track down.
No, he doesn't.
How is the oil situation?
I'm looking for a surfboard that gets 25 waves to the gallon. Otherwise, they say the seafood is safe to eat, but it's a little too oily. I mean, early to tell. But they have made that statement that the food coming out of the ocean is still good. They pulled the cap, the big hood off of it several hours ago, or yesterday, I guess it was, and it looks like hell on earth. But they're trying to put another bigger hood on this that hopefully will capture a good 90% of the oil that's trying to spill as they try to get this these two relief wells taken care of. And that's, you know, barring any situation where we might have a hurricane crop up. We got lucky with Alex taking a westward track and a tropical depression that did the same thing. But next week, who could tell? We might have ourselves a fire cane. Yeah, that would be if you get a hurricane with thunder and lightning and igniting the oil at the same time. I mean, it'll look like the Mayan calendar come to fruition, baby. I'm telling you.
Have there been any more sightings of tar balls anywhere east of Pensacola?
We've had some that were hitting some Central Florida beaches, but it's not for sure if they were coming from this mess or not. There are a lot of leaks.
There was a fishing ship that went out, that went down in the Atlantic, and but so they don't know whether it's from that or whether it's from the, you know, because that current wraps around the Keys and comes up from
the coast. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The Florida Loop Current. You're absolutely right, and that came up on the East Coast, and so they don't know whether that came from that. It's tell you what, I just get the feeling it's going to be a good 10, 12 years before it's anywhere back to normal. And it's not good. It's really not good. And also, no one really knows about the whales that haven't been manned, the rigs that haven't been manned for quite a while. There are a few that are out there. Nobody knows if they're leaking. Nobody wants to check. They're kind of afraid to. So I call BS on everybody involved over there.
BPBS on everyone.
Yeah.
Kill them all, let God sort them out, you know.
So, does any of the panel have anything else on Haley Cummings?
Still waiting.
Well, we do have the August coming up. We do have Misty has got, I think, till the 13th to either make a plea deal or it's off to trial she goes. And that's going to be interesting to see what happens. And, you know, there's still no word coming out. And she's got one of those really strange relationships with her attorneys, folks. You know, since the very beginning, she's had him pretty much in her pocket. She could use him whenever she wanted, but she always kept saying, I don't need no lawyer. Lawyers are for guilty people. And then, you know, as time goes on, we find out that the field had been pretty much in her pocket the whole time, if ever needed. And then when she did need him, she never really paid too much attention to whatever he had to say. He quit the case, and then he kind of came back. So I think he's kind of tethered in there, you know, some way or another. But it sure has been an odd situation with that young lady. So defiant, very defiant.
All right. The question is, why would the attorney want to attach himself? I mean, she doesn't have any stinking money. I mean, is it prestige?
Well, you get into a high-profile case, and if you happen to be lucky enough, guess what? You know, your stock goes up, and folks will start paying big money to get you, to help them out. I mean, look at half the attorneys that show up on headline news, and I'm not... This is nothing against headline news. They're trying to use them for their expertise. But hell, half of them are out there holding out their shingle saying, I'm for sale. You know, take my, you know, here are my services. You know my name. You've seen me. I'm trying to build some trust here. Look, I've done this case. Look, I've done that case. You know, your stock kind of goes
can
up
ask,
a little bit with the national promotion.
Can I ask a question?
Well,
Did anyone ever hear of John Morgan before Zenaida Gonzalez? I mean, certainly I did in this area, but, you know, and how much money is coming out of his pocket to, you know, because he's got to wait until August of next year before the trial. Now, I don't believe Zenaida Gonzalez is going to be working until then. That's an awful lot of money that John Morgan is going to be pumping into keeping her solvent.
But how is Zenaida or the attorney possibly going to make any money? But they're not.
Off other clients. Off other clients.
Yeah.
You're never going to make it off the one you're spotlighted on. You're going to make it off the other one too. You get your services quietly and you never hear about them.
Hey, Simon, I can tell you how far this thing drifts. Take a listen to one of the attorneys who really hates Jose Baez personally down there, who talks about running into one of the associates of Jose Baez, who works for Baez, who now is charging about 4 times per hour what they used to get before he met the girl Casey Anthony. So even on a losing case, the publicity and the notoriety, it's name recognition. And so anyone associated with that is able to charge more per hour and make a lot of money off this. So I think it's pretty easy to spot.
Denny, I've got a wild idea I'd like to float at you.
Denny, here it comes.
I'm wondering.
Do you think it should be mandated that attorneys can only charge minimum wage?
In some cases, it should be.
I think in some cases it ought to be loser pays.
That's right. That's right.
Oh dear. So, Denny, do you have any thoughts on the Kaylee Anthony case?
Yeah, probably none. I would want to mention. I get fired up with that, and I say things that I certain words that I probably would be better off not saying. But I want to see a bunch of people, and this sounds vindictive, maybe it is, but there's a lot of people, and I think they go all the way from some legal counsel through the defendant herself and her parents and possibly brother. I want to see a lot of heads roll before this thing. I think there's a lot of people had some explaining to do here, and it's got to be just like perhaps when the Haley case, when the dust settles, there's going to be multiple of people getting their head handed to them, and I want to see the same thing happen in the Anthony case. I certainly hope that's the way it goes.
As I understand it, and Dave, you're probably the expert here, on this coming Thursday, Lee and Cindy are going to have to be in court and tell us why those dang 911 calls should not be used as evidence.
Well, the defense says that it's hearsay. That's what they want them thrown out because of that. But if you look at it, Cindy smelled the vehicle. Cindy made a 911 call and said what she smelled. That's her nose and her mouth. Okay, it's not here. It's not hearsay. It came right from her nose into her brain, right from her brain out of her mouth. Okay, that's an excited utterance, and the prosecution wants to admit it in court at the trial. Now, the bottom line isn't so much what she smelled. It's the story that Casey made up about her daughter immediately when Cindy put Casey on the phone, and Cindy started throwing this Zenaida Gonzalez story out. Then that's the first time anyone ever heard it. So if that 911 call, the third one, is thrown out, then I think it was the third one. Then how much of what Casey said to the dispatcher could be used? Nothing then. None of it will be able to be used. And I think that's the bottom line. The prosecution wants to establish a timeline of when the story of Zenaida Gonzalez began. And it began when Cindy called 911 and put Casey on the phone. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lee walked by the... Lee walked by the car. You know, he's going to have. He's going to say that. So they all smell the car.
Right. Now, there's something that slightly bothers me, and that is that Cindy Anthony is a registered nurse. I would imagine that, you know, she has smelt death before. Jan, but, you know, this is a subject that we've talked about many times. I mean, as a nurse, she knows what death smells.
Well, of course she would. There's no doubt in my mind if she's a nurse, and, I mean, anybody in that profession should know what the smell would, you know, would be. I just can't believe that she doesn't know. She knew what she was saying. She was in a panic when she said it. She didn't she didn't stop to think of what the consequences could be if it was her daughter that had done this. She didn't think about it at all when she said that.
Peter, do you think that as a nurse she should know the real thing as opposed to rotting pizza?
Well, I've said this before, that the smell of human decomposition is so incredibly powerful and so incredibly unique that there's no medical training necessary. There's it's something that initiates the gag reflex of the human. It gets into the fabric, gets into clothing, and it will never, by anyone, adult or child, be mistaken for pizza, even for a decomposing animal. It is incredibly powerful. It is something that she worked diligently to scrub out of the car and out of the clothing. That's not something that anyone would think of with rotting pizza.
Right.
Also remember that Cindy also suggested that it may have been another body put in there. George said that maybe it was someone else's body that was there. They know. And the 911 call is going in, and this is just more hot air from Jose Baez.
To begin with, didn't they say that about another body, somebody else could have put a body in there after it was left at the gas station or wherever it was?
Yeah, that's what Cindy said, and that's
Scott.
That she's admitting
but
it.
One of her friends, I forgot if it was Amy or who it was, made the remark that Casey told them that the car had a bad smell to it, and she said, that's when she said, about a dead squirrel crawling up into her motor or something. So that would, that smell was in that car before the car was left there. So.
Yeah, but you can't infer.
Huh?
I've never seen anybody order, I've never heard of anybody order a pizza with squirrel in
car. No. What I'm talking about is the part about her, Cindy saying, well, somebody else put another body in that car at the while it was parked there after it was deserted there. But that just couldn't have been either, because Casey smelled the smell in the car and was complaining about it and then blamed it on a dead squirrel crawling up
right
in her car.
Now, I'm no expert on dead squirrels, but they tend not to crawl very much.
Yeah, well, that's my point. But, I mean, she didn't think when she said that. But that's what she said. So that would be the smell would have been in there before it was abandoned.
That's right.
But there were no animal parts down.
Okay.
There were no animal parts down in the car anywhere.
Yeah, I know. She knew what it was. It wasn't any animal at all. It was her daughter probably in the back of that car, but she told her friend it was a dead squirrel, that the smell in
right.
the car was. And the friend had no way of knowing any different.
Oh, okay, TJ, I've got a great idea for you. You'll love it. I mean, radio stations run competitions all the time. So, what you need to do is run a competition. Find someone that's willing to put, a pizza in their trunk for a month. And someone else that's willing to put a couple of dead squirrels in their car for a month.
Check and checkmate. It's a college town. I think we can do it.
Channel 9 already ran, I think it was Channel 9, WFTV, ran a test on
pizza.
I think they even added more ingredients, extra cheese and stuff. And it still didn't smell bad after, I don't know what length of time they did it, a month or whatever. I don't think it was a month. But it was the time from the car being left in the yard to notice the smell. But nothing would bring that smell up like death. Nothing.
No.
And everyone knows it. Oh, anybody that's ever had a dead rat, that's what they used to tell you about that smell. If you ever had in an old house, you set rat traps or set out rat poison, they'd crawl into the wall and die. And you had a heck of a time trying to get that smell out of that house. And that's just a rat. Now imagine, 300 rats, which would maybe be the size of a human carcass, daily size, maybe not that many, but
But imagine that, and you're going to get, like, how much stronger is that odor going to be? Because not only do you have the body, now you've got internal fluids leaking out of it, probably the mouth or whatever. You know, I don't know. I'm not sold that that was the way Casey killed her, by taping her mouth. You know, that it might have been put there just prior to leakage of fluids, just to try and keep her mouth shut, because her mouth would not close. So, you know, and who wants to look at the inside of a dead person's mouth? I you know, I think it was a cruel death, but I'm not convinced that it was the tape that killed her. So, yeah, it was in that trunk, and the fluids leaked out in the bags. And how she managed to keep most of it out of the trunk is beyond me. But I don't know. How bad is that smell? Peter, didn't you say, or who was it that said that human death is worse than animal death, smell?
It's the worst out there. I haven't been a teenager in 30 years, and I smelled it as a teenager, and it's still with me today. It's just the most god-awful thing you can imagine. You also have to remember about the dead squirrels crawling up in the car. A liar counts on the fact that people will interpret what she said rather than simply listen. So when they trip on themselves like that, people will just naturally say, oh, she meant to say they crawled up and died. That's not what she said. And it's another indication of deception. So this is an easy one, I think.
Okay,
yeah, I think so.
Well, let's go out to the phone lines. We have someone coming in from the 309 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, this is Catfish. And I wanted to talk about the smell in the car just a little bit more. Not just the smell that was there, but there was also the flies in the cadaver dog's head. There's a lot of things to prove that that decomposition was in that car. But as far as the hearsay testimony for the 911 calls coming in, I agree with Dave, you know, that would be an excited utterance. But also someone mentioned Amy, knowing that Casey had told her about the squirrels, that would be hearsay, right? If Amy couldn't testify that Casey...
Yeah, that would be...
Right.
Right.
So that's not coming in. And then also, this is just a little on a humorous note, if anybody else saw the video with Cindy early on in the case, where she was medicated or drunk or something, but she said that she is a nurse of decomposition.
Yes, indeed.
She honestly said it. I am a nurse of decomposition.
That's quite
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, I'd like to find that. But that's all I had to say.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
We seem to have lost TJ. I mean, boy, I really am going to start up a collection to buy him a new phone and phone battery. there's another story that's been hitting the airwaves for the last little while. Peter, I know you've been following it, this whole Kyron case.
Yes, I have been closely following it.
Tell us a little bit about it. Bring us up to speed.
Well, we had a 7-year-old boy who went missing from, allegedly from school. We had a stepmother who early on made statements that were inconsistent. And since that time, we've learned that she has failed 2 polygraphs. And it appears quite likely that she caused his disappearance and, at this point, likely death. The police have been, I think, working with federal law enforcement as well as local county together. And most recently we came across a situation where the sheriff had said that a decision was going to be made this week, and no decision was made, and Friday came and went without an arrest. But the father went to court and was able to get an emergency ex parte petition signed, an affidavit signed by him, approved by a judge, that gave him sole custody and a protection from abuse order where the stepmother has no contact or no visitation with the younger child. And in that affidavit, he wrote, the police gave him probable cause to believe that she caused the disappearance of his son and that 6 months ago she sought out the services of a landscaper to kill her husband for the sum of $10,000 or something like that. Yet we had that probable cause, but we have not had an arrest yet. So what exactly is going out there, I'm not sure. But I've been following it very carefully, and the statements that I've been able to analyze, and I've worked a little bit with the police out there, that cleared early on, cleared the mother. It clears the father of any nefarious knowledge. But the stepmother is the obvious target, but she's not named a person of interest or a suspect yet.
Are there shades of Haley Cummings in this?
Well, I tell you what, I just did a little work on it today, and there is another correlation between lying and murder. And what I mean by lying, I mean someone that's not simply leaving out information, withholding information, but someone that's fabricating reality. And they're now saying that the stepmother would fabricate reality. She would say, for instance, that the little boy was stung by a bee when he wasn't stung by a bee. It wasn't simply a mistake or something else. So she would describe things that never took place as if they took place. And there is a strong link between the very rare liar, the person that gets reality, and murder. And that goes in the face of what Cindy Anthony said when she said, Casey may have misspoken a few times, but lying doesn't make a murderer. And that isn't true. There is a strong link between a true liar, a fabricator of reality, and murder. In fact, there's a...
Well, I think it's the other way around. A murderer does make a liar.
That linked people that would literally testify in court on a capital case hearing, a capital case court appearance, where they would be willing to lie, even though it may mean the death penalty for someone. And that puts Cindy right up in that category, because she's willing to have Jesse Grund or the meter reader, Roy Cronk, others to be thrown under the wheels of the bus, knowing full well this is a capital murder case. So the parallels are kind of interesting there. Not only that, but we have with Misty Crosland, the lies that she told. Most of those lies that I have found from Misty have been lies of omission and slantings of truth, that sort of thing. Not the bold lie of Casey, Cindy, and perhaps his stepmother.
Denny, have you been following the Kyron case at all?
Not real closely, but I know basically what's been discussed here. I'm aware of that. You know, with the alleged hitman on the father and all this kind of thing, and the failing the polygraphs. Now, she, the stepmom, she was a person of interest, should I say, or suspicion on her shortly after this came down, wasn't she? Mm-hmm. It didn't take too long, I think, for this her name to start being put out there as maybe she wasn't telling the whole truth about the disappearance.
Peter.
How long was it before she...
It was almost quickly she became a person of interest unofficially, where they put out the questionnaire to the public, mm-hmm. and they asked, had you seen her? Had you seen her vehicle? Which obviously focused on her. At that time, her husband then defended her, and he reported that she was constantly questioning, why would people focus on me? But if you're not familiar with the case, she's quite a character. She was a bodybuilder. As late as 2005, she was posting pictures of herself with incredible amounts of testosterone in the body in order to create like a manly type appearance. And so I know it was asked on one of the talk shows, could that have affected this case in terms of her personality? And the psychologist said no. However, the high levels of testosterone maintained over a period of time could have changed the personality, where she'd still be affected by it, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later. Sometimes it's really strange to listen to this case and see what's passed for expert testimony. They had one psychologist on. This was stunning. Jane Velez Mitchell show. And Jane Velez Mitchell called on the psychologist for an opinion. And the psychologist said, I can't believe I'm repeating this even, but the fact that that Kane sought out an order of protection when he found out that she had taken out a contract on his life to try to have him killed was proof in the mind of the psychologist that he never loved her and never respected her. And I heard that, and I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, what is that poor woman going through herself? She's saying this on national television. And one of the rarest things I've ever seen on those shows is that they actually disagree with her publicly. So, really strange.
Actually, I'm just going to break in just for a second. Okay, to all the kiddies arguing in the chat room, stop it right now or I'll just close the chat room. So you've been told. Okay, back to the story. Sorry about the interruption.
I'm having trouble hearing you guys a little bit, but it sounds like you just hush the kiddies in the chat room. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
If they can't play nice in the sandbox, I'll take the sandbox away. Denny, do you ever have that trouble on any of your radio programs?
Not often, but it has happened. There's been some disagreements.
Yeah.
A little testy. Hey, you know, I just wanted to mention, Peter just mentioned about the questionnaire in the Oregon case, but I believe it was last week when Zach's mom was on and we were talking a little bit about this questionnaire, and I've had a chance to see that, and I can see where it would be a very valuable tool to use. I was very impressed with that particular document. I don't know if what's going on with Zach's mom, if she's thinking about trying to do something with that or not, but I was very impressed with it, and even though I'm not an expert by any stretch of the statement analysis, I can see where there would be some information that these people would have to provide, which to a trained analyst would undoubtedly, I think Peter was mentioning, it would clear a certain percentage and have other ones that would need follow-up and maybe an actual guilty party or parties. So I'm impressed with that particular questionnaire.
Yeah, actually, Peter, I do want to talk to you further about that idea. Christy is keen on doing it, but she's also saying, well, the people that we need need to fill out the questionnaires are the last people on the planet that are likely to going to comply. But I do think we should talk about it.
I'll tell you what, Simon, when someone is involved and has information, you will be surprised, I think, to know how much they do want to talk and how much they do want to cooperate, because it's like this terrible burden upon them. This is why a skilled investigator is able to get a confession. We have not only the statistics, and Denny, I think you'll love it, on the last page of that questionnaire, when we ask people, why should we believe you? Mm-hmm. They fall into a category of truthfulness or lack of truthfulness that is incredibly accurate. So when someone says to us, for instance, because I don't lie, that is a negative. If someone tells us because I've told the truth, that's a positive. But here's another indicator we use that's really well. If I said to you, Simon, you think that I did it, if I'm able to frame the words, I did it, within my sentence, the percentage of likelihood that I did do it is extremely high. And
don't let my wife hear that.
Why not?
Or the possession of the pronoun, which says, you know, if you think of my guilt, an innocent person will not say my guilt. And I was looking at that today in some of the old statements, believe it or not, of John and Patsy Ramsey, when they said about our guilt and some of the other deceptive indicators that were in their statements. O.J. Simpson, for those people who believe in my guilt, for those people who think that I've done it, or if someone says in interrogation, what? You think I killed him? I can almost guarantee and bet the house that person killed him. They're able to frame those words. It's an amazing phenomenon in human language. So people do like to talk, and if someone has information, one of the reasons they want to talk about in this missing case that you have, Simon, is because they want to know what you know about this case. They want to know what investigators know about this. They're worried. They're nervous. They're about the last ones in the world that would refuse to cooperate.
Yeah, I do want to get a copy of this questionnaire, and I can't guarantee any success because I don't really have great ins with the local cops involved. In fact, they probably have a wanted poster up for me in certain areas. But, you know, I would love to pass along the line and say, hey, you know, just for grins, why don't you try this?
Simon, even if the family themselves would be willing to take a look at this and amongst themselves, if anyone has any information that they're withholding, we'll know that this person has more than they told us. And if they don't know what happened and they don't know why he left or what happened to him, we'll likely be able to see that too. So I know the odds are low that perhaps we'll pick up something within the family, but just in case, if there's anything with the squabble with the sister, anything like that she is not told, we'll know that she's withholding information. I don't mean that in an accusatory way.
Yeah, I'm curious about this document, and it certainly has.
Are you talking? Is this the questionnaire that was passed out to the people at and near the school? You're talking about?
No, not.
It's just a general questionnaire.
Because I have this one in front of me. It's an adult form that was asking questions like, "Why were you at Skylane's school on 6/4/10? What times did you arrive and leave?" That sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a very different.
So, and then there's. It is.
Yeah, okay. No, it's very different.
Well, what is
sorry,
this
Dave,
one? I don't
have
know.
Trouble
what I
hearing you. That was very.
I must be
designed.
Missing information.
Yeah, no, that was specifically designed. The one you're talking about that gave out for the Kyron Horman case, that was specifically designed to search for clues rather than find out if people have knowledge and are withholding it. This is more like a verbal polygraphy. This is more like a giving a polygraph test to a lot of people at once. And that's not what they did. They did
okay.
Things quite different.
Okay, because I haven't seen that one then. Okay.
This is very rare.
Would this
okay.
questionnaire have been useful in the Haley and Kaylee cases?
I do think so because of that drug world that's out there and all the connections that have been out there regarding, at least in the Crosland case, the people that knew them, the people that maybe had known where Misty was that night, if any of them were lying to us about that, we would be able to pick it up. It's very sensitive. The sensitivity on it is very high. There's only one problem with it, and this is maybe not so good in that particular area of town, is that it's designed with just slight changes for each case. If it's a missing persons case, if it's a rape, if it's an assault, very different, very slight changes. But because of the sensitivity of it, we sometimes pick up deception and someone has done something that they should not have done, but is not related to the case. So we have to be really careful with how we use it. This person is showing as a liar, for instance, who has not told the truth, but it's not related to this case. And I found one time this happened where someone did not have knowledge of this particular theft, but was implicated in another theft that we didn't even know took place until a couple weeks later. So it's very sensitive and it's very useful for picking up information, but it tells us who to focus in on for an investigation. That's the best part of it. And if we have a lot of people involved, like we might in a missing persons case, it can clear 70, 75, even 80% of them immediately upon analysis, putting into the just by the last page alone, Denny, you'd be interested in that. It just clears them out quickly, and it focuses the investigation really well.
Denny, do you think this is a tool that should be used more widespread?
I would say so because it can be done to a lot of people, not to a lot of people, but can be administered, if you will, to a lot of people quickly. They don't have to actually be in for a polygraph, and yet, if I understand it correctly, it can get virtually the same results as far as detecting deception. And to me, it looks like a heck of a tool.
How can we get people to start using it?
It is used all across the country. There's a great story I told Denny about where a detective had been using it for many years. He was very skilled at it and was able to interpret it quite well. And a large sum of, I think it was evidence money in a drug deal, had gone missing from the police station. And so all the police officers and the detectives themselves filled out the questionnaire. And the questionnaire caught the detective who used it as a tool himself in solving crimes. It tests out about the same as a polygraph machine with a real skilled polygrapher, someone that really knows what they're doing in terms of the questions and the pre-interview.
So the real key here is in the interpretation.
Yeah, we statistically we look at answers with historical accuracy of when someone answers this way or that way, we throw them on this side or that side. And what we do is we look for people to clear themselves. We want them to tell us that they don't have any knowledge of the crime and they had nothing to do with it. And that is something that just is really easy to do. So if you have 100 people to interview, you don't have the man hours for that. We can pretty much guarantee you by using the questionnaire, the 100 people that you had to interview are now down to only 25 or 30 tops.
Right. I remember, and it was back in the 80s when I was still relatively young. I applied for a job, and I had to do something like a 2 or 3 day psych evaluation. And at the end of it, I said, okay, am I crazy enough to work for this company? And they said, oh, yeah. My point is the questions, and that there were literally thousands of them, were very, very well crafted, and they did reveal a lot about the person. Is this sort of the same idea?
Along the same lines, we have one question that will tell us a psychological profile that you won't believe. Is we ask someone to tell us what they did. You can pick either Saturday or Sunday, preferably a day you weren't working, you weren't traveling. From the time you woke up to the time you went to bed, write down everything that you did. And you would be stunned, as I am stunned even to this day, of how much it reveals about ourselves, about personal issues that you never dreamed you'd be sharing with people. And this goes everything from the state of your marriage to your sex life to medical issues to all sorts of deeply personal information. It is leaked out, and a profile can be brought up. This in the questionnaire is not so much that. It really is focused upon an event, and a person that's telling the truth will clear it very quickly.
Can I just say something about this? I think you're all right about that, because I remember in the 80s, Simon, a company kind of like Big Lots, but it was called Odd Lots, and they were up and down the East Coast, I believe, and they flew me down to Fort Lauderdale from Orlando for a job interview. Well, the interview was really nothing more than, I don't know how many, like 8-10 page questionnaire. A lot of them, I think, had multiple choices. Like, if this happened, how would you react to this? A, B, C, or D. And at the end of that thing, you know, it was my best friend who worked for the company that got me, the interview. That's all the interview was that questionnaire. I think about 2 weeks later, they got back to me and they said, well, we don't think that you're a good fit for our company. We don't think that you're, you know, management material for a retail store like this. But you're very creative and you should pursue a job in the art field. Well, you know what I was doing for a living? I was a graphic artist for an advertising agency. So they had me, they had me pegged just from that paperwork that I filled out. And I never really spoke to a human being about it.
Yeah. Some of these psych tests are right on the money.
It sounds like the Myers-Briggs psychological testing.
Yeah.
What did you call that?
The Myers-Briggs.
What did you call it? I think that was it. I think that was what it was called.
It sounds like it was. The Myers-Briggs.
B-R-I-D-G-E?
B-R-I-G-G-S.
I'm going to look that up. Oh, G-G-S. Okay. Got it. But I'm going to look that up. Because that was, I think, you know, that rung a bell. So.
That's what it sounds like to me.
But
both of you were taking.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you, on the other hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm hearing loud thunder outside, and I'm sure death and destruction is headed its way to our phone lines and electrical supply. So I do want to wrap this up so that the show doesn't disappear into thin air. I want to go once around the panel, get everyone's thoughts on the cases, and I'm going to pick on Jan.
You would, huh? Okay, well, we'll start out with the Haley case. I hope and pray that something breaks. I mean, everybody is getting on edge. Everybody wants to hear some answers about where this child is, and we're praying for. And with Zach, his mother needs the support from everyone. She's a good lady. We know her personally, and she's desperate to find any information she can from her son, about her son. It's missing. And we're here to try to give that to her. And with the Kaylee, all I can say about that case is I hope and pray to God she gets the justice she definitely deserves. And my prayers is with all three of these people.
And Kyron, don't forget about that one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I'm kind of out of it right now.
Peter, give us your thoughts.
I think we've seen arrests shortly in the case of Kyron Harmon. I think their stepmother was involved, and I think she acted alone. I don't think she had anyone with her. That'll be for another discussion. I look forward to 13th when Misty Croslin must make a decision about her future, and I think that TJ probably will be a great source of information for us all. And I think that the 911 call regarding Casey Anthony will be admitted easily, and again, that'll continue to be a slam dunk in my mind.
Oh, I don't think it's a... But there's no way the judge is going to throw out the 911 tapes. Cannot possibly happen. What about the Kyron story? Do you see any movement there? Oh,
I think that an arrest will be this week. I really do. I think it's very short, very close.
Wow. Whew. I'm in two minds. I hate the idea that there's going to be an arrest. I'd much rather find the little girl alive or little boy, you know. But it's just not happening.
It doesn't appear.
Yep. Denny, give us your wrap-up for the day.
I'm pretty much a ditto for what Peter just said. I suspect that they're pretty close to something in the Kyron case, and certainly this August stuff in the Haley case should prompt some type of movement, you know, when tough decisions are going to have to be made. And I want to mention, if I could, about the Zach case. Some things I've learned recently from the perspective of a family member seeking justice, seeking answers in a case, especially if it's a situation where the investigation may not have been quite up to speed. Not necessarily corruption, but just perhaps some certain things weren't done the way they should have been done. And maybe we could talk about it sometime in the future. If you're going to battle the bureaucracy, you got to be tough, because I'm learning that by being non-responsive and making you go through hoops to get information about what was done, what wasn't done, and so forth, it can cause a lot of these family members to quit, to give up, because they just get browbeat. They get beaten down to the fact that they just can't deal with it anymore, having to file papers, having to contact this one. And you never find a place where Harry Truman, you know, the buck stops here. You just don't find that. It's always, well, we really can't address that. You got to go to a different department. You got to go to a different unit, whatever. And you really got to be strong if you're going to be taking on a governmental entity trying to get answers. So, and that's almost could be a segment on a show in the future. It's really something.
Oh.
I wasn't aware of it, but it's there.
And I'm in total agreement with you, Denny. And Dave, your thoughts?
I don't know any more about the SAT case. That it would be nice if we could hear something. I'm trying to pay attention to the Kyron Forman case. I'm more inclined to think that they'll arrest her for attempted murder. Trying to kill her husband, or she'll be arrested for Kyron's disappearance and probably ultimate murder. But I think Peter's probably right. It'll come this week, because they were saying they were going to do it this past week and they didn't. You know, something was going to break. But my understanding was always that they were not being always straightforward with the media. So they had that pressure on them. Now, that's not a pressure meaning that they were going to make an arrest because of that media pressure, but I think they thought they had enough, you know, to do something, but obviously they didn't. But on Casey, Kaylee, Cindy, Lee, I think that, I know I'm going to go to that hearing on Thursday, so I would expect to have a lot of interesting things to say next Sunday. So it should be an interesting
hearing. That'd
be great. Yeah. Put them both in the stand. I wish one of you people could come with me, you know. They're very interesting to sit and watch and listen to.
That's
basically my thoughts.
I think it's going to be an interesting week in all of the cases, actually. I really do need to wrap this up. So, this is Simon and Jan Barrett wishing everyone just a wonderful day, and we can close down our computers and not fry them.
Yeah, this looks bad out there.
Well, Simon, I hope you, both of you, I hope you feel better.
Oh, I'm sure by next week, I'll feel different. Hopefully better.
Yeah.
All right. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone, Simon and Jan Barrett, wishing everyone a great week, and we will be back next weekend.
Thank everyone for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, till next time, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.